Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is John Kibarian, President, Chief Executive Officer, and co-founder of PDF Solutions. He has served as president since 1991 and CEO since 2000. Welcome to the podcast, John.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me.
John, what is your background and what first brought you to the semiconductor industry and EDA?
Sure. So, yeah, I grew up in Rhode Island. I loved engineering, so science. So I applied to engineering school and was in Pittsburgh and took my first semiconductor physics class and just really loved it. And I thought maybe I'll go into this industry. And, you know, Pittsburgh in the mid-1980s, the steel industry was kind of shutting down. And so you saw all these people having to figure out a new career midway through their lives. And I thought, well, I don't want that to happen if I go into semiconductors. And there was this thing called Moore's Law that I learned about in class. And so I did the math and thought, well, you know, you probably can't make it smaller than a few angstroms, you know, because 5 angstroms is a lattice constant. So 10 angstroms, that seems like the smallest you could go. So I did the math to say, you know, would I get to 65 before the industry ran out of runway? And it seemed like it was possible. So I thought, okay, maybe I'll go into this industry. And then that was what got me to semiconductors. And I went to work for one summer for a chip company called Cherry Semiconductor. And it was an analog mixed signal company. They were doing a lot of bipolar designs and CMOS analog was just starting to really take off. And I saw all the engineers there getting super nervous about how do you learn how to design analog and CMOS if you spent your whole life designing in bipolar. And I thought, wow, that's, you know, technology transitions could really make it difficult to stick around. And when I went back to school, I met these professors that were doing EDA. They're algorithm people like Ron Rohr and Steve Director and Ajay Srivastava. I thought, well, this is really cool. If you're doing algorithms, then it doesn't really matter what the underlying technology is. You know, it's really just about the math, and that's more portable. And so I got interested in EDA and algorithms, and that's what got me to go on to grad school in that topic and, you know, my focus on, you know, algorithms and design automation.
That's a good story. PDF Solutions was founded in 1992 and is publicly traded. Can you talk about the evolution of the company and where it is today?
Sure. You know, so it's, you know, it's a long time, right? So 30 something years, but let's kind of break it into the chunks that were there. So we got started, really our first tools were based around TCAD, technology CAD, so process device simulation to predict, you know, variability of the technology. Software sold to folks that were sitting at the design and manufacturing interface, which is really where we've always focused, and I've always found it a fascination. In the late mid-1990s, Cadence and U.S. Venture Partners invested in us. We were started in Pittsburgh, and asked us to move headquarters to the Bay Area, which we did. And you know, it's got us to think about how to really drive yield improvement around that technology. And we pivoted the business in that time frame and focused on the fabs trying to bring up advanced nodes. Greatly, and, you know, from let's say 96 to 2003 or 4, focused on a lot of the Japanese companies as they were transitioning from making commodity products to SoCs and needing to reimagine how you did process design integration and the interface between the designers and the manufacturers. We learned then the importance of data and the need to have the right data to be able to ramp yields and understand those subtleties in design and how it impacts manufacturing. You know, that took us up through, let's say, the mid 2005-6 timeframe. And then as the Japanese companies at that time were winding down their semiconductor investments, we pivoted to really focus on the foundry fabless interface. And it grew out both the business with the fabless companies as well as a business with the foundries, and then eventually you know, started to get connected to the equipment vendors, because we, around 2020, acquired a company called Symmetrix, and what they did is provide software to the equipment vendors so their equipment can communicate the data you need in order to be able to control the technology and really understand those interactions between products and and technology. So today, if you look at PDF, we have about 350 customers. About 200 of them are equipment companies. Probably 130 or so are fabless, asset light IDMs and system companies. And then the remainders are foundries and IDMs that still, you know, really focus on manufacturing. So it's, you know, across the industry at this point, because everybody really in our industry participates in achieving yields on products. It's not just one company's role.
Wow, that's a good pivot. So how about today? What global industry trends are you seeing?
Yeah, so I think there's a few of them. I think the first one is what everyone sees these days is 3D. Right, so 3D in silicon processing. So we've gone to gate-all-around transistors that are truly 3D. You know, soon backside power, which means we start routing on both sides of the transistors. CoWoS, EMIB, and all these other technologies that are really enabling you to do, you know, chip on wafer on substrate. So more and more complex 3D packaging. So this 3D theme is something that's here and will expand. It's, you know, really kind of still the technology for a small set of products today that are incredibly important, like some of the AI products that are out there. But we expect this to expand. And virtually, you know, if you look at any product that's going to use 3 nanometer and 2 nanometer in the future, these will, and below, these will all be somehow 3D, because the PDKs just for N2, for example, really predicate that you're going to be on a, that the chip is going to be in a pack system and package at some level. The second trend I think that we think is quite important, I call it, you know, the electrification of the energy economy, right? You know, historically we generated energy with hydrocarbons. Now we are, you know, using wind, nuclear, solar. But this means for a lot of stepping up and stepping down voltages, transitioning from DC to AC. And so silicon carbide, gallium nitride, all of the compound semiconductors, because you've got to basically move a tremendous amount of the economy from, we generate from hydrocarbons to we move around on electrons. This is just a huge opportunity for the chip industry. You know, I like to say, if you think about a Model 3 Tesla, it's got about half a 6-inch wafer's worth of silicon carbide transistors in it. And that's yielded, right? And the yields aren't that great on those technologies. So this just, you know, if you're going to say 100 million cars a year are going to be made and they're all electric, which is, you know, kind of where we're going over the next 15 years or so, that means we need to stand up a tremendous amount of capacity on electrification. And then the third factor, let's say, right, you know, we have become a strategic industry for the world, and that means every government wants to see how much production they have onshore. And our industry has been one where, you know, the way we've gotten economies of scale is whoever builds the biggest fab, concentrated in the smallest geographic footprint, with the fewest number of products running through it, has the best economics. And that's, you know, fundamentally from the 1950s, when the late 50s, early 60s, when the industry started, till today, that's pretty much whoever wins, who's ever the winner at that point is the one with that meets that criteria. Highest concentration of capacity, fewest products running through it, you know, with the highest volume, you basically win on manufacturing efficiencies. Well, now the world wants geographically diverse from a national security perspective. You know, software is defining hardware, which means you get a much higher number of designs. And then when you look at things like CoWoS and EMIB, these are process technologies that are specific to the chiplets and products that are put together. So you get very product-specific manufacturing. And this is the future, which means the third thing will be a much more nimble, much more software-based way of running manufacturing to account for the three trends that I talked about, the 3D packaging, the electrification of the industry, of the carbon economy, and number three, the geographic spread out of semiconductor manufacturing.
Right. You know, with the emergence of chiplets and 3D devices, what are the operational and business model impacts on the semiconductor supply chain?
Yeah, I mean, I think these are just starting to be recognized. You know, first of all, what's going on? I think it's just there's tremendous opportunities in chiplets and 3D. First of all, you know, you don't have to design everything yourself. There is going to be a marketplace for chiplets. right? There already is that at some level today. But why redesign things? You know, if you look at today, customers will often go and buy IP to do USB and PCI Express and other industry standard communication protocols. Why re-implement those? Functioning chiplets, you know, could enable that work to just be, you know, purchase a chiplet instead of buy an IP and synthesize it. Number two, you know, so design, I think you can really just focus on the parts that are differentiated in the future and be able to put together, you know, like Legos, complex systems. But this means the manufacturing process is very specific to each product, right? You know, if you think about a foundry 3-nanometer technology, by and large, the foundry does tune the recipe to each product, but it's modest tunes. When you look at processes like, you know, CoWoS or EMIB, these are much more specific to the product combination, the chiplet combination at hand. So there's going to be an incremental need to be more targeted in the way the manufacturing runs. So, you know, you're going to be able to, I think, see much more flexibility in the way people put designs together. This is kind of like the plug and play of chiplets or legalization of design. Two, you're going to see the manufacturing processes be very specific to the products that are being built. There, you know, there'll be this is going to be done with software and efficiency, because we can't really spend a lot of effort to run lots of silicon or lots of manufacturing flows to get an optimal recipe. And then number three, when you just think about that from a supply chain, you know, you're going to be buying from your competitor potentially a chiplet. You need to know that that is not just good, but characterized to be in the window that you need. And then you're going to have, you know, a manufacturer assemble that with the rest of your chiplets. And so when you think about RMAs and field analysis, you know, field return analysis, there's going to have to be a way that we communicate data and the way we work together as an industry. But the opportunities that this will enable, I think, are huge.
Interesting. So how are analytics and AI helping to transform the semiconductor industry?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's helping in a couple of ways, and it's going to help, I think, even more in the future. So, you know, my point a little bit earlier, governments of the world want us to build factories geographically diverse locations, you know, and smaller in scale typically than, you know, concentrating all the factories in one place. And they're, you know, just due to the nature of silicon these days, with software defining the hardware, there's more and more application specific designs. That's why we see such growth in the EDA industry over these last handful of years. And so we've now got to be, you know, efficient in manufacturing chips that are higher diversity in chips, lower volume, in processes that are tuned for each individual product, particularly when you look at the advanced packaging. And so I always like to say, you know, if you were to, you know, this quoted when the CHIPS Act got passed, I think Morris Chang was quoted saying that, you know, these will be futile. And I think he's by and large right. If you go and look at these factories and say, I'm going to run these factories the way conventional foundries run, because they don't have scale, they're geographically diversified. But, you know, it's similar. My argument is, if you think about when Google got into the advertising business, you know, I said this recently at an industry event, if what they did is built robots to go and sell ads up and down Madison Avenue for TV spots, it wouldn't have been a very interesting company, right? They went and said, okay, how do we use information to fundamentally change the way you look at ads? And they built a business with a market cap that greatly exceeds all of the TV networks combined. And that same opportunity, I think, exists in manufacturing. We don't use all the information coming out of design to optimize manufacturing. If you think about how much of it gets thrown away, it's staggering. We don't really, you know, factories create petabytes of data, and we don't use all that data really to optimize them. I would argue that, you know, often the engineer sitting inside a factory has, when they go and do a search on the web, there's more sophisticated algorithm figuring out what ad to sell them than there is often in a lot of the control schemes in production these days. So there is a way, I believe, of applying what's gone on in the internet world to our industry, and that's greatly leveraging AI to transform the way we manufacture, to use far more information that we have latent all over the enterprise to be more effective in the way we do production, and more effective in the way we diagnose and control the variability that, you know, will be present in our manufacturing, you know, till the end of time.
Yeah, I agree completely. You know, it's interesting that PDF Solutions sits between design and manufacturing. What will bring them closer together?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've kind of touched on that with AI. I think, you know, AI is a big piece of that. You know, when we've looked at, you know, the way the industry's tried to apply AI, you know, whenever you try to apply AI to a narrow problem where the width of information, the breadth of information is relatively narrow enough that a human can kind of keep track of it, it is very hard for the algorithms to do better than the human. As you know, you kind of get it. I mean, one example of that is just, okay, I want to predict when this piece of equipment is going to need preventative maintenance or control it better. It's hard to beat the human. It's possible, but it's really hard. When you look at a really wide vector of information, you know, I want to consume all of the PLM data about the IP that went into this design, all of the timing information, you know, when we close timing on this part, all of the vectors and what vectors were generated and what were not, as well as all of that equipment control variability data and, you know, inline inspection data, et cetera. Now the vector is so broad and it encompasses, you know, domains. You know, in our industry, those are all specialized domains, right? You know, there's an engineer that focuses on each part of that. That integration across all of those dimensions is something you can just do in software and algorithms so much better than you can with individual humans. And I always called it, you know, human limited yield improvement. Like the human can't understand, you know, the relationship, they often reject it. And the algorithms can really do a great job there because they will ferret those things out. And then, you know, through follow-up analysis and detailed poking around, the human can get their head around how that all happens. And I think this is really one of the biggest places, you know, leveraging algorithms to go broad and then help that broad world come down into the dimensions that a human can go and get their head around and grok, gives us the opportunity, I think, to make improvements, you know, that you really can't see. I mean, if you think about the way like professional chess players work these days, you know, they leverage computer chess to get better, right? And the same thing is gonna happen with the way we manufacture and engineer silicon. We're gonna use AI to make us all better at the way we design, produce, and control chip production.
John, I noticed on your website that PDF is hosting an AI executive conference to explore how AI is revolutionizing semiconductor design and manufacturing. What more can you tell us about that?
Sure. You know, AI is something I think that it has great promise for our industry. I would say greatly. It's still something when deployed, let's say deployed in the world of test, you know, advanced testing for a complex system and package. If you just look at the number of test insertion points these days, people are using AI and ML to take feed forward information to decide which chiplets belong in which other chiplet with other chiplets in a package, to optimize add and subtract tests to be more prescriptive in the way you tune the production flow. These are still techniques that are deployed by, I think, the small number of real experts inside the leading companies in our industry. And for AI to really have an impact, what companies are looking for is this to be pervasive. And I was meeting with a CEO of a large Japanese semiconductor company maybe about a year ago, and he said, "John, we have tens of thousands of employees. I think there's 30 people that really know how to use AI ML in my company, and that's a problem." And so, you know, this conference is to really look at, you know, what are the successful applications that people are demonstrating. Customers will present what they're doing, you know, industry experts on what they're doing with AI and ML to make a difference in their business. And then, you know, there'll also be our partners presenting, you know, like partners like SAP and Siemens and Advantest and others, presenting how they're enabling the infrastructure that will bring down the effort barrier. We think today there's a huge barrier of just, you know, expertise required to apply these techniques. And as EDF and many of our partners lower that barrier by making the systems more integrated, by really making it so the data flows more seamlessly from one application to another, so the semantic models can align that information, so you can really apply these algorithms without being kind of a data wrangling expert. There'll be a democratization of AI for our industry. And so this conference is to kind of have the luminaries point the way of where things can go in the future, and the industry to respond on what we're doing to try to lower that barrier so we can get a democratization of AI for, you know, everyone in the chip industry, not just the few that, you know, are the specialists today.
I'm looking forward to it. So final question, Sean, how can we get more information about PDF Solutions?
So, you know, I think attend the webinar, attend the seminar, the conference would be a great way to go. It's in San Francisco on December 12th. Of course, our website has lots of information. I always point out there's some useful tools on our website. You can convert Poisson to Bose-Einstein yield models. You can look at learning rates and project if your product has a certain yield, what would the rate at which it'll get to the yield you want to see. You know, software for playing around with, okay, this is my die size, this is the wafer size, how many gross die per wafer will I get, given a yield model, what would be the net die per wafer? So there's, you know, lots of information on our website. There's also tools to play around that help you, I think, as a product or test engineer or manufacturing engineer, understand kind of the relationship between technology and designs and product, you know, product volumes. So you can kind of play around with that. And then, you know, lastly, you know, really just contact, you know, on the website, you can always reach out and contact and talk to an actual real human. And sometimes that can be the most effective way to get kind of targeted to the information that you're interested in.
Thank you for your time, John. It's always great to speak with you, and I'll see you at the AI Executive Conference.
Thanks, Dan. Looking forward to seeing you there.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.